next speaker is Andrew Lenson. Kind of going to shift topics a little bit from irrigation and mostly rain-fed systems. Andy is an extension agronomist, research and extension.
Three-way split.
Okay, with the Department of Agronomy at Iowa State University. He's been there since about 2012. Before that, he was a lead scientist with USDA, ARS, in Sydney, Montana. And his presentation is on tillage systems, their influence on water use of annual forages in the northern Great Plains.
Thank you very much, John, and it's nice to be here today. And actually, I'm not going to talk about rain-fed systems because up in the northern Great Plains, we're a step down from rain-fed. We're actually truly semi-arid, and I'll get into that in a little bit. I'd also like to thank my co-workers who put up with me for many years. They're actually a great group. Let's see which button works here. So to describe the area where we were in Montana, or the Mondac region, northeast Montana, western North Dakota, it's a short growing season, longer than a few places, but pretty short, certainly short compared to the panhandle of Texas. Annual precip varies from about 300 to 360 millimeters per year. If we have bilingual people today, that's about 12 to 14 inches. So pretty dry. And that's 12-month precip, not just the two-month rainy season. So we have a very large deficit of rainfall compared to potential ET. Our wet months were May and June most years. Of course, it's Great Plains, so it's very variable precipitation. 100-year variance for precip is over 50% of the mean. So rainfall is low and not consistent. It's a real constraint. And terminal drought also occurs in many years. In our area of Montana, beef cattle were the number one industry, and so it gives us an opportunity to work with annual forages, which we haven't heard of much, haven't heard anything on today. And let's see, I bet we have a pointer on this thing. Here's a pointer.
Radar.
Okay. The area where we're located in Montana is actually right in here. That black line is the Missouri River, where it's heading east. And the research I'm going to present is north and south of the river. Just real briefly, our crop management in these zones strives to maximize utilization of light, water, and nutrients. And water is the largest constraint most years. Because it doesn't rain very much, we don't have a lot of cloud cover during the growing season. It's pretty unusual to have several cloudy days in a row. And when we do get rain, it's often measured 1/100 of an inch per hour. Not in Iowa. Iowa, nobody cares about an inch of water hardly most years. And there are a lot of cultural practices that one can use to improve utilization of these primary factors, the primary factor, especially water. And that's what I'll present briefly today. And I was asked to speak on cereal forages again. I wanted to reiterate that. And I'd like to acknowledge that our work, my work, our work in our unit in ARS is in large part predicated by the work of others, including Drew Sciotis in Cyprus back in the 70s, Pat Carr at North Dakota State. I don't see Pat here today, not in this room anyway. And also others, Gene Harker and Martin Entz in Canada. Take a quick trip here, called Froid, Montana. Anybody speaks French, it should be froid, means cold. And here you can see some larger size plots. This is a research study we started when I was still in Bozeman. So this was 147 miles from my office. And we were looking at annual cereal forages replacing summer fallow in wheat fallow rotations. In this case, it was durum fallow. This is just a picture of onlitted barley. Notice the awns are mutant. They're very short, so you don't hurt cattle mouths when you feed this forage to cattle, whereas if you fed standard on barley, they get sore mouths and they quit eating. And there are also Austrian winter peas in this. So I'm just going to present this study really quickly, because we don't have a lot of interactions or complicated treatments. in this study. Had simply five treatments. We have durum in rotation with fallow, three annual forages, and then alfalfa hay that was seeded when the study was started. And just mean yields, years did vary, but over time, we saw that replacing fallow with forages was actually a valid system economically. It actually made more money for producers than wheat fallow, or durum in this case, by about $50 an acre. What's the water use like? Because water is what's most limiting to yield. And that was one of our primary questions in this study, is water use, where we no longer have fallow. Well, the barley and the barley with pea essentially were identical lines. So they're regressed together here. And you can see actually the water use efficiency, or actually productivity of biomass production by millimeter of water used, was a little bit better for these cool season forages than our warm season C4 foxtail millet. That was kind of unexpected, but it was. And for all of the results I'm going to present today, dry matter yields are always 100% dry matter, whether it's grain or forage. And water use is water balance method, and it was either gravimetrically determined or mostly with neutron probe. Pre-plant, post-harvest, add in the rainfall. So from these early results, we went into additional system studies into crop diversification and intensification. That first one was pretty simple, just two-year rotation studies, because we know that crop fallow destroys soil. We've heard a lot of talks on that for 30 years at these meetings. We're interested in improving soil quality through diversification, intensification of the system, and that would be through pest management, cool of more soil carbon, hopefully, or at least stop the decrease in soil organic carbon. We want to improve also profitability and ecosystem services. And it's also important that we have to balance water use, because water is limited when you're farming in a 12.5 or even sometimes under a 12-inch rainfall, 12-month rainfall zone. That's a lot of Montana. So this study was done at Sydney. That's located just south of the Missouri River. We had four rotations in this study. They included continuous spring wheat with pea, that's a two-year rotation, then a three-year rotation where we put annual forage barley, just like in that previous picture, but without the Austrian winter pea. Then we had a four-year rotation where we also inserted field corn. This is a 12.7-inch rainfall area, 320 millimeters per year. We had every component of each of these four rotations present every year in a matrix of two tillage systems and two management systems. The tillage systems were zero till, where we use low disturbance openers, and the conventional tillage in this part of the world is a single pass with a field cultivator. Most places that would be considered minimum tillage, and that's important. We're not using a moldboard plow. We're not even using a tandem disc. Describe our management systems. They do vary for each of those four crops. And for barley and for wheat, we had a standard seeding rate of 900,000 pure live seed per acre. Sorry if it's not in hectares here. We had broadcast urea prior to planting, and that would be for both the till and the no-till system. We were planting in the conventional system in the short wheat stubble. Under the ecological management, we had a 33% higher seeding rate on the same row spacing. We had banded urea about 5 centimeters to the side and below the seed row depth in a single pass system. And we were planting into taller wheat stubble. And this is what it looks like after we plant the plot. Yeah, the planter was a great-looking machine. It was pretty funny-looking. We got a lot of looks pulling this thing up and down the highways. But you can see it's very low disturbance. It leaves a lot of stubble. So we conducted this study for 9 years. I'm going to present 6 years of data to, or results today, not just data. And we had a number of treatments, and most of this will be just for the forage barley. Not going to plant, present a lot of results for corn, peas, or wheat. We had several important factors where we didn't have any interactions. No interactions were significant. Main effect of year is significant for all parameters, and there's no surprise in that one. For stem density is important if you're growing a forage or a grain crop. Tillage system didn't matter. Under our ecological management, where we had the banded N and the greater seeding rate, we had more stems. Rotation didn't matter. When we look at individual stem weight, which is a yield component for defining yield or determining how yield might have been affected, we had no differences for any parameter other than years. We look at just our main effects for water parameters. These would be pre-plant water, post-harvest water, and where we calculate our water use efficiency. And again, pre- and post-harvest, water are at 120 centimeters of depth, and it's all neutron probe. It's calibrated for this soil. We didn't calibrate on a sandy loam and then take the measurements on a Williams loam. Not a lot of differences here. Using the water we have. A lot of the post-harvest water that is left is actually below the rooting zone, which was very pertinent to the question we had at the end of Dr. Ritchie's talk. For water use, we do have difference, only for the rotation. Adding corn into dry land rotations is, as Pete Peterson and Neil Hansen after Pete on that long-term study in Colorado does very interesting things to soil. Also does very interesting things for snow capture. It's a much taller stubble than our wheat stubble. You combine it, you have stalks that are 2 feet, 3 feet tall. Excuse me, a meter tall. You can capture a lot more of that blowing snow. And 25 millimeters of additional water in the northern Great Plains, it's a lot of water. Barley stands, of course, this was in part treatment, but here we're looking across our management levels and years and rotations. 2 of 6 years, we had a difference in stand density for tillage system. As we know, for most of our cereals, particularly if they're not in high yield situations where water and nitrogen are both abundant, and sunlight, our cereals can compensate for fairly substantial differences in yield, in plant density. We saw this earlier in the stem densities. Our barley biomass, we had differences for our tillage system in 3 of 6 years, but they're not consistent. They're not consistent at all. And you can see we have some pretty large differences in yield. Well, we'll get to that in a minute. As I mentioned earlier, precipitation is variable. We look at our weed biomass. Now, I haven't heard too many people talk about weeds yet today, but I raise weeds. They're part of the real world out there. And I was the weed ecologist in the ARS unit. In this study, in the previously mentioned study, we never used an in-crop herbicide in the forages. We never used a pre-plant herbicide with any residual activity. That's part of our method or part of our rationale for the development of these management systems is to make the crops more competitive with the weeds. Weeds are a big issue, including herbicide resistance and how to delay it, how to manage them better. So we did have differences in 1 year for weed biomass. We actually did also in 2004, but that was the year we set up the study, so I didn't put it in this results. It's important to see here, no weed seed were produced in 8 of 9 years of this study in the crop. 8 of 9 years, zero weed seed production without a herbicide. Actually, we've got about 30 different environments with this system, and only in one did we ever have weed seed produced. And that was when it was too wet. We had 20 inches of rain that year, and we couldn't get in to harvest it. So, given that we had weeds and forage, well, it's all forage when you run it through either John Deere equipment or an old Versatile, we have total biomass. And again, this is 100% dry matter. Didn't add in that 12 or 15 or 18%. And here we have tillage influencing yield only 2 of 6 years. And the trend is not consistent there. Unfortunately, I don't have a single good picture that shows differences between our management systems for forage barley, but I do for maize. And here you can see one maize plot in the foreground and one in the background, but we're not talking about maize at this point. Look at barley biomass and how it's influenced by management system. And here we have 3 years of 6 where we have differences. And again, they're not completely consistent. They are, in this case. Ecological management produces more barley, forage. Water use efficiency, we're finally getting to water. And I loved seeing Neil Hansen's corn earlier where it was water deficient in Provo. That was great. Here we have water use efficiency was greater in 2 of the 6 years under the ecological management. And you can see it's highly variable. Sorry I don't have kilograms per meter here. We look at the actual data over the 6 year time period. We find that barley has a greater slope. That means you give barley more water under ecological management, it will respond and produce greater yield. And the slopes here are actually different, that 17.2 versus the 22.8. And water use accounts for a little over 50% of the variation in yield, which for my end of the world is actually pretty good. But that we're still only, water is only accounting for half of the variation in yield, water use. Well, I mentioned earlier that we do a lot of work with weeds, and this is across our tillage systems because tillage had nothing to do with biomass in this case. We look at weed biomass predicting barley biomass, and our two systems are very different. Under the conventional system, conventional management, weed biomass at harvest accounts for 36% of the variation in yield, whereas under the ecological management system, weeds account for only 15% of the variation in yield. We have fewer weeds in that ecological management, and they have a much lower impact. A kilogram of weeds decreases the yield of barley by 0.6 kilograms, whereas a kilogram of weeds in the conventional system decreases the biomass by just slightly over a kilogram. We had four crops in this study. I was asked to talk about how tillage impacts the annual forages. And basically, tillage has a limited impact on annual forages with our tillage system under these conditions. The grain, the wheat, the corn, and the pea here are grain yields over the six-year time period. And, there you go, John. You can see better with me out of the way. And note that maize has higher grain yield, actually, in a 320-millimeter rainfall area, and actually higher water use efficiency, but lower water use than wheat, which actually surprised me very much. If I had 2 hours, I could present some more of those results. Real quickly, one more slide on a winter wheat forage study. We had several questions and comments earlier about the effects of nitrogen fertilization and how that might impact water use efficiency. And this presents both. This is a Willow Creek winter wheat, which perhaps you'll get the opportunity to work with at some point, Jessica, up in the Flathead. It was released by Dennis Cash and Pat, the barley breeding technician, a number of years ago from Montana State. So it's onlitted, doesn't have the standard ons, and it's late maturing. And this study was only no-till. At this point in my career, I said, we don't need to be working on tilled systems anymore. The majority of our farmers in this part of the world no longer till. They no longer have fallow. We were 95% recrop, so why should we be doing research just because we can get really great differences where we have fallow in a study or tillage? So this is all continuous cropping, all no-till. Then we have banded versus broadcast N because the majority of the farmers were broadcasting their nitrogen because you can't fit enough N fertilizer in your tank for your air seeder to plant very many acres without having to stop. So here we had four fertilization rates. These numbers do not take into account residual nitrate in the soil, which we did measure, and that was to 120 centimeters. And you can see fertilization rate greatly improves not just yield, but it increased water use efficiency. It increased water use efficiency. In large part, although I'm not going to present those results on the next slide, it's because we get the plants rooting deeper into the profile. In many years, our crops are only rooting to maybe 60, 70, 80 millimeters. And then they hit a dry band of soil, particularly in continuous crop systems. There's almost always a dry band of soil somewhere at around 60, 70, 80 centimeters depth. They won't root through it. So with that, I'll conclude the tillage system actually has comparatively little effects on yield of most crops in the northern Great Plains under continuous cropping systems. When you till just once with a field cultivator, which is the most common type of tillage. Now that is different for corn in our study, where we tilled twice. We tilled in early April to kill that first flush of weeds, and then we tilled again just before planting. Tillage by year interactions are huge with corn in our study. They'll have to get that another day. Water use in barley accounted for about 50% of the variation in yield in the two studies I presented. Similar to that, about four or five other published studies we've done. And tillage by year is inconsistent when it is a factor, when it is statistically significant. We don't get consistent results in the northern Great Plains. So with that, I'll thank the hardworking technicians that did an awful lot of the work, Mark Gaffrey, Renee France, Joy Barsotti, and Michael Johnson. One's missing. So thank you. If there are any questions, I'd be happy to explain it to you. Yes. It certainly is in the regression functions I presented. Yeah.
And that's tolerated by the farmers who don't really care, but they have to be biomass, not where the market doesn't care?
The market for most hay, certainly for barley, for cereal forage, is mother cows, dry mother cows in the winter. And the primary ingredient in most rations is wheat straw. So this is a big step up from wheat straw. Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's not an issue. Actually, if you look at like the work Gordon Martin did with ARS right here in Minnesota, you know, 30 years ago, a lot of the weeds actually have nutritive values as good or oftentimes better than cereal forages.
Do you not get concerned about the weeds
taking over? No, I don't, actually, because we've had really great success. And gee, I presented that on a poster here 3, 4, 5 years ago, a bunch of years of weed data and what happened over time in these different systems. No, we're not producing any weed seed in that herbicide-free forage system. We're not producing. We produced weeds one single year, site year, out of about 30 some odd. Actually, I think 33 environments we've had. I had weed-free forage barley. Wheat, not weed-free, herbicide-free.
So the seed coming in from
seed bank. Seed bank is very important. Wild oat is one of our primary weeds, and wild oat seed life and half life can be 5, 6, 8 years. So you'll have seed that will survive 15, 20 years. Kochia, which you also have, I know, and Russian thistle, they do blow. They don't make seed. This is harvested in late June, early July, and kochia in our environments and Russian thistle doesn't begin to make seed until sometime in late August. You can kill it. I never said we're herbicide-free after harvest. We do use a burn-down of some sort, generally with glyphosate, dicamba.
Since we talked about tillage, the purpose of tillage in the Northern Plains, what's the purpose?
Okay, the purpose of tillage...
The water conservation thing?
Well, the purpose of tillage back when it was a wheat fallow system, and that's tillage from Canadian Prairie into Chihuahua, Mexico, was... during that fallow year, to kill weeds and to have a stubble mulch or to break that capillary action so you reduce evaporation. That wouldn't be as much of an issue on your sand and the red or white blow sands in Lubbock. But all the other heavier textured soils, you break that. And so every time it rained, if you started to get some weeds growing, you would till, you know, 4 or 5 centimeters, actually it's typically about 7 centimeter depth is what the average was for many, many decades. And of course, that's why you should farm in strips to keep the wind erosion down to just a terrible level. And having a spring wheat crop or a winter wheat crop, you would have fallow for 18 to 23 consecutive months with very limited carbon additions. Soil quality went way downhill. So a lot of our soils, talking 0.8% organic matter, 0.8. It's actually not a whole lot different in Lubbock, is it? But you have irrigation water. Do we have troubles with runoff? We had runoff in 2011, and that was the year we had about 4 feet of snow on the prairie, followed by a week of rain where we had about 8 inches in 1 week, and that's when everything downstream flooded for about 6 months. Yeah, we had troubles with runoff, and that's why I don't present the 2011 data, because we had runoff and water balance. Well, an assumption is you don't have runoff or run on, and you don't have deep percolation beyond the root zone.
It's a measurement issue.
Yeah.
We're going to move on.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, John.